All right, guys. I'm going to do a 2-minute meditation, and then I'll lead us in a prayer. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt.
Leave me in bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that I may hear of them and bear witness to those that I help and that power, thy love, and thy very life, and that I do thy will always.
This one's called Center. From a bud, only a promise. Then a gentle opening, rich, blooming, bursting fragrance, the fulfillment of the center. True beauty comes from within. Take a flower for an example. In the beginning, it is only a bud. It does not yet show its loveliness to the world. It does not attract bees or butterflies, and it cannot yet become fruit. Only when it opens is beauty revealed in its center. There is the focus of its exquisiteness. There is the source of its aroma. There is its sweet nectar. In the same way, our own unique beauty comes from within. Our glory has nothing to do with our appearance or our occupation. Our special qualities come from an inner source. We must take care to open and bloom naturally and leisurely to keep the center. It is from there that all mystery and power come, and it is good to let it unfold in its own time. Just as a flower goes through stages, bud, open, bloom, pollinate, wither, fruit, fall, each of us go through our obvious stages of birth to death. We aren't of a single character throughout our lives. We grow and change. Our identities unfold and bloom. Unless we attain the center and keep to our progression, we cannot ever reach true independence in our lives.
Thanks, Brandon. I'm Tarek. I'm an addict. I'm on page 17 in the big book. It says, we are average Americans. All sections of this country and many of its occupations are represented, as well as many political, economic, social, and religious backgrounds. We are people who normally would not mix. But there exists among us a fellowship, a friendliness, and an understanding which is indescribably wonderful. We are like the passengers of a great liner the moment after rescue from shipwreck, when camaraderie, joyousness, and democracy pervade the vessel from steerage to captain's table. Unlike the feelings of the ship's passengers, however, our joy in escape from disaster does not subside as we go our individual ways. The feeling of having shared in a common peril is one element in the powerful cement which binds us. But that, in itself, by itself, would never have held us together as we are now joined. So this paragraph describes the fellowship, the spirit of the fellowship. It's a great description. I want to talk about these other elements that hold us together. So now we're going to turn to page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we only know a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come. Condition, if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. Condition, see it to it that your relationship with him is right. And great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Condition, abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Condition, admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Condition, clear away the wreckage of the past. Condition, give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road, which is the happy destiny. Not any place we're trying to get to. The actual journey in of itself is the happy destiny. Page 17, they introduce you to the spirit of the fellowship. Page 164, they introduce you to the fellowship of the Spirit. What are these elements? Because it says that the spirit of the fellowship on 17 would never have held us together as we are now joined. So what held this glue that holds us together has many components, and it's a magical combination and mixture, and it really truly starts with the surrender that we've been talking about all weekend. And as you move through the process and each step takes you into a deeper surrender with that step, you come into this fourth step, and specifically steps 4 through 9 is what create the space. That's what creates the space to allow us to store future emotional pain. And that space is created when we clean house in steps 4 through 9. Those steps is how we do that cleaning. Now, you know, the big book says a business that takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. I'm here to tell you a business that stays in inventory is going to go broke. We got to be open for business. You guys understand what I'm saying? We have to interact out here. We have to take stock. And so I love reading out of other books. And this book was written by a man who co-authored the 12 and 12 with Bill Wilson. His name's Tom Powers. He was the co-author of the 12 and 12. And he's right here talking about specifically steps 4 through 9. It is practically impossible to achieve two immensely valuable qualities by direct effort, and they are honesty and humility. Attempts to be humble tend to be self-defeating or to produce caricatures of humility. Likewise, with being yourself, if you deliberately set out to do it, you're likely to end up just putting on an act. But regular work in practicing honesty automatically deflates pride and arrogance, and thus produces a marginal increment of real humility. This is exactly what we're about to do in the fourth step, and the fifth step, and the sixth step, and the seventh step, and the eighth step, and the ninth step. If you look at the humility too hard, of course, or rejoice in it too much, it is apt to evaporate. Look at it, if you must, out of the corner of your eye. And finally, a man who is growing generally more honest and more humble does not have to struggle to be himself. It begins to come naturally. The relief in returning to oneself is almost incredible and sometimes almost insupportable. I know men who have wept when they felt it for the first time. The blessed freedom, the release and joy of not having to maintain a front, not having to curry favor, not having to fool anyone. The clear, unshifting gaze and the steady nerves. This is worth the work in steps 4-9. Individual personal work on oneself, trying to apply the principles of honesty and responsibility and fair dealing in the regular daily affairs of one's own life, this, of course, is basic. But without further aid of a specific kind of group activity, the fellowship, the best efforts at self-honesty are likely to become slipshod, ingrown, and curiously blind after a time. Why is special work within a group of people like-minded in their approach to the spiritual basis of life so necessary? Because I can't see my own faults clearly. No matter how hard I try, in the right kind of group, I can get a look at myself through the eyes of others in a way that is deeply revealing and deeply releasing. That, for me, is a incredible description of what happens in the fourth step. I cannot rest on a solitary self-appraisal. I can't identify the causes and conditions of my failures. I need someone who is not emotionally attached to my life, who can listen and be objective and guide me into the sentence that's in our fourth step. It's in our third step, but it has to do with the fourth step, that our troubles are basically of our own making. So when I'm listening to someone's inventory, after I listen to the inventory, I always ask them, do you see how this trouble is of your own making? Because we cannot go forward until you do. The entire process of steps 4 and 5 are about eradicating the idea of being a victim. And so my experience with being molested, for instance, what did that 4, 5, 6, 7-year-old do to make that trouble of his own making? Absolutely nothing. But what did the adult or teenage and adult Tarek do with that experience? It was justification for all the shit I've done in my life. That happened to me, so it's my excuse now. I deserve this. Give me what I want. If I run roughshod over you, it doesn't matter. That happened to me. I should be able to do this. It was an excuse and a reason to run roughshod over many people in my life, a lot of females as well. I was at a convention years ago, and there was a speaker. And she had been raped by her uncle for years. And as she got older, she was running with some gangs I can't remember all the details, but she robbed the uncle. I think she had some people pistol whip him. I mean, they roughed him up pretty good. And you fast forward, this young lady gets sober and, you know, it's brought to her attention during her 4th and 5th step, that she suffers from this abnormal, like she gets taken over by this compulsion or this physical craving when she puts drugs in her body, and she goes off and she cannot control what happens. And then she has this mind that takes her back to it over and over and over against her will. And then it was, as she was telling her story, she said her sponsor asked her if she thought that her uncle could have been suffering from a compulsion. That it, like maybe her uncle, you know, was doing it against his will. And he couldn't stop. And it took a hold of him like addiction takes a hold of us. And she had to entertain the possibility to the point where she became willing to believe it. And she went and made amends to this man. It was by far the most powerful amends story I've ever heard, ever. But when the big book talks, we're ready to look at it from an entirely different angle in the inventory process. That's what that transition point from the third to fourth column truly is. That gap between 3 and 4 is where compassion is born. But we're only able to see it. She was only able to see how her troubles were of her own making because of all the things she had done. On the flip side, how she had been dishonest, how she had been selfish and self-seeking, and how she had been frightened. And that gap, it says, perhaps the person we're writing about is spiritually sick. God, please allow me to show them the same patience, tolerance, and pity that I would cheerfully grant a sick friend. God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done. And that's where the compassion for this individual was born. And that's where the compassion for me and my cousin was born. You know? And so there's this watered-down piece of Alcoholics Anonymous that I just cannot shake when I get to this part of the thing. Nowhere in the big book does it say that I look for my part. But that's all I ever hear, for the most part, people say in meetings. My part. I need to look at my part. You know, I need to take ownership of all of it. I set aside the other person entirely is what the big book says. The big book says, just so I don't misquote, referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others have done. So if it's out of our mind, it's not involved. We resolutely look for our own mistakes. That's what I'm looking for. Not my part, my mistakes. Where had I been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person entirely. What does it mean that they're not involved in the situation anymore? I'm only looking for my mistakes and where I'm at fault. And so the challenge here is if this is the situation, right? This is the resentment that you have against somebody that you believe really messed you over more than you messed them over. If I'm going to take a part in it, it's going to be that little corner. I'm going to leave the rest for them. That's the way my addict mind works. My alcoholic mind works. I don't want to take ownership. As a result of this, when it comes time to make amends to this person, if I'm truly showing up to clean up this part, they damn well better clean up their part while I'm there. And I'm here to report to you that I have witnessed with my own eyes individuals walking through their 8th and 9th step amends with that type of unconscious thinking going on, maybe even conscious. They're aware of it. They come out with a resentment because the person does not take ownership of their part. So we got to be really careful here when it comes to this idea of responsibility. And I think that your experience with steps 4 through 9 will deepen if you can take responsibility for all of it. Doesn't matter what the resentment is. We do resentments, we do fears, we do conduct. I'm not going to go, Brandon and I are many years away from talking about technique. We're not, you know, either both of us could spend an entire weekend talking about step work techniques and how to write and different types of inventory, and it doesn't matter. The surrender is actually taking the action to write the inventory. It's, again, a surrender. If you're in the process of writing inventory and you're not writing inventory, it's not step 4 that you have a problem with. It's step 1. You see no connection between step 1 and step 4. Writing the inventory has nothing to do with taking a drink or not writing the inventory. Not writing the inventory is not truly connected to smoking crack or shooting dope or whatever your thing is. And as a result, we won't move forward. That's why the big book says we some of these we balked. Right? We balked because we had lost our sense of desperation. Fortunately for me, and the gift of desperation did not leave me. I remember being in the treatment center, and we had rec activities every day, right? In the middle of the day, in the afternoon. And I was in inventory, so I was asking the staff if I could skip rec so I could sit in the dining hall and write inventory. You know, we had a dining hall, not nearly as big as y'all's dining hall. It was probably a third of the size. It was a smaller treatment center. There's only 17 guys in this treatment center. And they would all come back from rec, and I'd be in the dining hall writing, and I could hear them making fun of me. You know, I remember when we had our softball team, they thought it would be funny because we all had shirts that had like names. We all had nicknames and stuff. And because my name is Tarek and it's Middle Eastern, what I ended up getting on my shirt was that on the back of it, it said the 12-step terrorist. Right? I've been called a 12-step Nazi. I've been called a big book Nazi. And now I'm being called a terrorist because I am passionate about the 12 steps. Well, I'm here to report to you of those 17 men, 7 of them are dead. I'm the only one that stayed continuously clean and sober. I don't know why it played out like that. But what was present was a desire to do the work. I mentioned this yesterday. I think Brandon has touched on that there's something in us that wants to do this work. And as we move through the process of steps 4 and 5, and we start uncovering, one of my mentors used to say that inventory is about finding out who you're not. And then as you find out who you're not, who you are emerges. I think today that it's more about both. I think you find out who you are and you find out who you're not. Like, this is the only model in the history of the world and creation. There's only been one model of this Tarek. Never again will there be another model. Because if God or the universe created two of me, then one of me would be unnecessary. And I don't believe that to be true. So in my way of looking at things, every single person in this room is a unique expression of godliness. We are anchored in this existence by a seed. And that seed, in its essence, connects all of us because it's something we will never fully define or comprehend or understand how this thing is inside of us. The great reality is deep down within every man, woman, child. So as the way I look at inventory today, I think there's a tradition that says he who knows himself knows his Lord. And my job is to understand how I was manufactured. Because everything you see, faults and everything, is design features. And as my current sponsor says, if you got design features you don't like, you better recall that shit to the manufacturer. That manufacturer is God. Go back to God. What a beautiful thing. The things I struggle with today. I mentioned two of my greatest defects are like this idea that my experience is the experience. Not true. But I'm driven by that at times. The belief that if your experience is different from my experience, you must be lying about your experience. I struggle with that one. The belief that my time is more important than your time. I struggle with that one. I still struggle with this need to be important. I struggle with this need to be right. It's not nearly the struggle that it used to be. But I see this stuff. These are attributes that I have that are God-given, good or bad, just along with all the good things that I have. Right? But what's beautiful about the character refinement that has to become a part of the spiritual basis of life is like every year, I go back through the step process. I go back to step one. I did it last September. Me and 5 other guys sat down, and it was about 6 or 7 weeks we went through the steps. And what's really pushing me and bringing me back down at the table to sit down with God yet once again is my struggle with aspects of my character. That's what's bringing me back down at the table. So there's a beauty. Remember the story last night about as we sin, the string is cut and it's God bringing us closer? I think that's what's in play here. You know, the more I struggle, the more I experience the burn, the more I understand that this is one of the things that's bringing me closer, because I know my only solution is my relationship with the power. I have to go deeper. As I take actions to seek a deeper experience with that power, it changes me, but I'm not the one doing the changing. You know, a lot of times when we get on this path, it's like the power is changing us and chipping away over here. And we're like, no, no, cut that shit out. Chip over here. You know, that's what we want. We don't want to change there. We want to change here. And it's all this incessant need for us to be the sculptor or the architect. And it's not like that. There are a lot of things that I struggle with today that I wish would be gone and taken and cast out. But that's, I think after 15 years, I can tell you, that the same defects I had 15 years ago when I showed up here are still here today. But what's changed is the consequences. Like, you know, when Bill Wilson talks about the root and branch, my newfound friend came to take him away, root and branch. He's talking about the root is the grosser handicap, or these limiting belief systems we have about the world, the principles that we live by. Like, my time is more important than your time, or I like to feel good, right? And so what ends up happening, if we live and are driven by this idea that I got to feel good, or I have to get what I want when I want it, we're going to take pretty drastic action to get that thing that we want or to feel that feeling we want. I still have those same roots, but what I do has completely changed. So I don't have the same branch, but I got the same root. So when I showed up here, the things I would say to you when you were violating my time and it was clear that you were wasting my time, now I can do this thing where I pause when I'm agitated or doubtful and I ask for the right thought or action. And I can still engage you and look in your eyes. And there may be a struggle going on inside of me, but I won't turn to you and say, God damn it, man, you're wasting my fucking time. Get out of my face. That's a totally different branch. And this is what happens as our spirit wakes up. And it's like this guy Mike says, like when I heard him say this, he had 35 years sober. He said the same defects were still present. But when he showed up 35 years ago, there were these two roaring lions that walked with him at all times and clawed out everyone's eyes that came anywhere near him. But now at 35 years, there are these little kittens that purr next to him, but they're still there. You know, and left unattended without any spiritual basis of life, those lions are going to come right back. So I don't know if defects of character are ever entirely removed. Like, I don't steal anymore, right? But stealing was just me trying to get what I want when I want it, right? I still struggle with what I want when I want it. I just don't steal anymore. But the root is still there. And these roots keep me thirsty, man. I am thirsty because I want more of God. Because I suffer from the belief, and I don't know if I want to use the word I suffer. Some people might think it's suffering. I live by the belief that if I go deeper into my relationship with God, one day this stuff will be entirely different. I just don't know when that day is going to be, but I keep going. I keep going. So I'm still thirsty. And in the spiritual basis of life, guys, it is better to stay thirsty than to ever have your thirst quenched. You want to stay thirsty. Right? I know it sounds like a Bud Light commercial or something, but the spiritual thirst is what I'm talking about here, guys. Spiritual thirst. So these steps, 4, 5, 6, and 7. I heard an old timer say this. I say this to a lot of the guys I sponsor because I want to motivate them to make their amends. But the miracle of steps 6 and 7 happens in the actions of steps 8 and 9. There is something that happens in how we are oriented towards life and God's children, or the, you know, God's creatures. When you're sitting across the table making an amends and you look in someone's eyes and you see the Spirit, and the Spirit in your eyes sees the Spirit in their eyes, but you also at the same time see the pain that your selfish and inconsiderate habits have caused another human being. And something in you says, you know, if the spiritual basis of life will minimize the chance of me doing this to people, then this is where I'm at. This is why I'm here. Right. I know my defects sometimes make me attractive to other people. But at the end of the day, if I don't have some type of faculty that's akin to self-examination, I will not know myself. So what I said earlier, he who knows himself really knows his Lord. You don't have the capacity to do that. The inventory process, 4 and 5, they create enough space for this to happen. But the rest of the process, the steps are also involved here. I think that's all I want to say on these steps right now.
Thanks, Derek.
So, I'm an alcoholic. My name's Brandon. And I think one of the things that Tarek and I do a little bit different than most people that do workshops and seminars and whatever is that we try to bring current experience best we can. We had an interesting conversation at coming back from lunch about like what amends to talk about, because you know the reality is that there's not a whole lot of just massive damage and wreckage I'm causing in the world anymore. But I'll tell you one thing that I've experienced today is a first step around something different. So when I say current experience, like talking about like we're still in the middle of this experience right now. Most of you have, if you've been paying attention, you know that I got up pretty early this morning and I'm I was low energy and I was trying to navigate my way through that. And so one of Brandon's plans was I was going to skip lunch because I didn't want to get the gut bomb and get tired. But it was suggested that I should come and just be a participant. And so I agreed to go. And it occurred to me somewhere along that experience that one of the guys that I know pretty well, he's kind of into fitness. Might be something like a power lifter and do some fitness coaching for people. And he probably knows something about nutrition, right? And so, you know, I'm a smart guy. I know a lot of stuff. You know, if you just hang out with me long enough, I'll tell you about it. But it occurred to me, wow, you know, I have a sponsor to help me through spiritual matters. Maybe I could talk to somebody that has some more knowledge about nutrition, about how I can eat something and have my body fulfilled and yet not be tired for a later session. And so, like, I felt like a newcomer asking questions when I was going through the menu of, like, well, how about this or this? What would be better, this or that? And he giving me the scientific answer to a lot of it. And it's like, okay, well, I'm just going to eat this. And I am happy to report with the advisement of a sponsor through my lunch is I have energy and I am not ready to go take a nap right now. You see, we can have first step experiences in all sorts of stuff all the time. And that first step begins in any experience by saying, I don't know. Okay, so one of the things that I see a lot of the time is people know what inventory is going to look like. And they'll tell you all about what inventory is going to look like and why they don't need to do it. And when you ask them, where'd you get that from? Have you actually done it? They go, well, no, it just seems like that's how it's going to be. One of our mentors says, I have no interest in hearing from somebody on their opinions of what they think something will be like if they have no experience with it. And I'll tell you that the inventory process, as written in this book, is so simple and precise and exact and magical if you do it this way. The things that you will learn about yourself and what you're not and how you interact with people and the way that you see things. They say weird things like, we turn back to the list for it held the key to the future. What do you think they mean by that? You know, what I think they mean is that if we turn back to the list, it'll hold the key to the future. Because if that's not what they meant, they wouldn't have written that way. And so...
it's pertinent to the guys in the first row, which you said earlier about the, I know how to work the steps, but I've had guys, this has literally happened. Sitting in the first row, he came up and said, all right, I'm ready to go. I said, man, you just got here. He said, I'm going to work the steps. And I said, when did you work? I worked during the motion this morning. Right? They read them off the wall, and in their mind, they know what that looks like. I said, yeah, I'm going to.
Yeah. So the short form of the steps is contained on the wall over here, okay? That's the short form. It's just a sentence that kind of outlines it. That's the outline format, right? So, like Tarek talked about, the first step is there's the pages out of the doctor's opinion plus the first 43 pages. That's the first step, right? And then you have chapter 4, which is We Agnostics, which is 13 or 14 pages, which is entirely devoted to the second step. And then you have the chapter How It Works, which starts on page 58 and goes to page 63, I think. No. Anyway. That contains steps 3 and 4. And then the chapter after that contains steps 5 through 11, right? So unless you've actually gone through the book from the title page all the way to the end of the chapter, How It Works, you've not done the fourth step. And unless you've gone through the next chapter, then you've not done 5 through 11. And then I'll give you some kind of like foreshadowing of what's to come. There's this chapter called Working with Others, and then there's 4 more chapters after that that are titled Two Wives and the Family Afterwards, Our Respective Homes. And then there's another chapter called Two Employers, Occupations. And then there's a chapter called A Vision for You, which is Our Affairs. The 12th step occupies 75 pages of our book. Okay, so what that tells me is if the first step covers 50 some odd pages, it's probably pretty important. And if the 12th step occupies 75 pages, I mean, it's probably really, really important. And where most people fall short, from my perspective of watching people, judging people, is the 12th step. That people fail utterly in understanding the encapsulation of the 12th step. So if you're sitting in the front row and you've read the thing on the wall, then yes, you've done a very good job of reading the outline, but that is not the step. The inventory process has 3 components. It has resentments. Now, the book tells us that resentments is the number one offender. It kills more alcoholics and addicts than anything else, including drugs and alcohol. So resentments are a big deal. And there's 4 columns to that. The first one is who I'm pissed at. The second one is why I'm pissed at them. It's very complicated. And then the third column talks about the 7 areas of self, where I go in and I look at how this resentment affects my self-esteem and my pride and my ambition and my security and my personal relations and sex relations and my pocketbook, which would include time and money. And then, like, everybody can get down on that. The mistakes that Tarek talked about, that fourth column, where have I been selfish? Where have I been dishonest? Where have I been afraid? Where have I been self-centered, self-seeking? Like, that's where the magic comes in that. Now, I'll tell you from my own experience, the resentments... I thought I was pretty cool with the world when I showed up to AA. I'm a happy-go-lucky guy, no big deal, but I had 127 resentments, right? Kind of made me start to realize, ooh, wait, maybe I'm not so okay with the world. Okay. Although I had 127 of these resentments, they were not the area that I found the most realization about self. My first four steps, that there was some fear in there, but it was like I didn't even comprehend the word fear until I was like 3 years sober. Like, and most of you have no concept of what fear is until you actually start to live life a little bit. What I know from being here for a little while is that most of what drives me in my life are two things, is fear and pride. And if my pride is simply that I'm afraid that you're not going to view me the way that I think I should be viewed, then, well, everything's fear. Okay. My first inventory where a bunch of the realizations came was from they call it the sex inventory in the book. I call it conduct inventory because it's conduct and personal relations. Like, after you've been through an inventory once, unless you're, most people don't really have a lot of repeat of sex conduct problems, but they have a lot of problems with conduct in relationships, period. That is where the realization for me came in the first inventory I wrote, because I started to see how the way that this demand that you respect me and that wanting to be important and my desire to dominate relationships and all these things, it all came from this, from the way that I interacted with the opposite sex. Now, when I took that conduct inventory and I reviewed it back to what had been written in my resentment inventory, it shined a different light on it and I saw it differently. When I was about 2 years sober, I went back through the steps and that's where the resentments really showed up and it identified a lot of how I thought and what I looked at. I was about 3.5 years sober when I wrote a fear inventory, and that's when I realized that I was actually afraid of things. And good news was, I was only afraid of everything. I had come to this realization that if I was unwilling to do something in my life, it was probably because there was a fear associated with it. And so it gave me a different perspective. And it was in that inventory when I was writing, it at a monastery before a retreat. And I was writing this fear inventory, and I finally saw something about myself that I didn't want to see. I saw that I was a fraud. I saw that I had all of this stuff that I wanted to achieve and get out of life, but I was unwilling to put in any effort. And after writing the first piece, that was hard. I started in the second one, and it was the same shit, the same fear. And so I advise that you get a sponsor that's actually competent. And so I called my sponsor and I said, hey, I'm writing this fear inventory, and what I see is that I'm a fraud and I can't keep writing and I don't want to see it. And he said, so why are you calling me? And I have enough awareness to say, well, I want you to say something magical that's going to get me to go back and keep writing. And so he did his little chuckle like he does. And then he's like, hold on just a minute. And I'm in construction. So he said, okay. So he's like, you know, have you ever watched an excavator excavating like a foundation on a project, and how when it rips through the earth, it's tearing through the earth, and it's this horrific experience, and what it's trying to do is it's trying to get into it down to a solid footing, bedrock, where it can actually build a solid foundation from there. He's quiet for a second. He goes, how'd I do it? I was like, that's good enough. And so I went back and kept writing, right? And so as I on average, I was rewriting inventory about every year and a half. And then I got into some other modalities of stuff where I started looking at some other ways to kind of seek understanding of things and my actions. But I'll tell you, it's interesting to me because one of the guys I sponsor, he's part of a steel-on-steel group, and it's like a legit steel-on-steel group, not one of these fluffy ones, where they actually dive deep and they look at stuff, right? And they were talking about reworking the steps. And he was asking me, so how do you, if we've been through the steps before, we want to rework the steps as a group, how do you do that? And like, there was this this feeling that kind of welled up inside me that was very similar to like ask somebody how to order the correct meal for lunch so that you're not tired. Like this desire to not want to admit what's really going on inside of me, because it's like, you know, these guys are only like 2 or 3 years sober and I'm like way more spiritual than them. And like I'm so far advanced, like you can just give him some cliff notes of what he should do. But there's this thing inside me that's like, maybe you should go back through the steps with him. And it's like, no, don't do that. Right. Fear, right. Fear that I might not look as cool as I think I really am. And so I was like, well, let's talk about this again because I need to sit with something. He's like, what do you need to sit with? I'm like, well, maybe I'll take you guys through it. I don't know. And he's like, okay. So when will you get back to me? And I'm like, oh, it'll be pretty soon. I know what this feeling feels like. And so I called him the next day and I'm like, okay, if you guys want me to take you through as a group, I'll go through with you. And he's like, well, I got to check with the group and stuff. So we've agreed to do that. And it's terrifying because it's like, man, I'm going to have to humble myself to actually admit some of my shit that I don't want to admit, right? So what I'm reporting to you is that as spiritual as I am, sometimes it's still hard to go and look at that stuff, right? So if you're struggling trying to get through your fourth or fifth step, I get it. But here's what I'll also report to you is that I've probably listened to, and I don't think this is an exaggeration, somewhere between 100 and 200 fifth steps. I've sat across from another guy, and he's read his inventory to me. And I'll tell you, nobody has anything new. All that stuff, like, look, there's only one version of you, just like there's only one version of Tarek and one version of me. And your unique combination of that, those defects and the way that goes together, it is unique to you. But all that stuff that you think is such a big deal on your inventory, it's not new. None of it's new. There is only one thing to date that has not repeated in a fifth step that I've listened to. Is there was a guy that I listened to his inventory that when he was 8 years old, he listened to his father and his uncle plot his mother's murder. So unless you got that, you don't have anything new. There's nothing different about your combination of defects. Nothing. And if you sit across from a person that's listened to one of these before, if you listen to a fifth step correctly, all you're listening for is the patterns of behavior that show up in the person's life, the self-defeating principles, the things that show up that are causing this person's failure. That's all you're listening for. The details of like Sally and Sue and Jimmy and John and all, like, none of that shit matters. It's the patterns. Okay, because it's the patterns that are going to kill you. It's not Sally and Sue and Jimmy and John. It's none of that. It's the way that you show up in the relationships. That's what's going to kill you. That's what's going to cause you to drink. That's what's going to cause you to use. The people, they're not very important. Right now, here's another thing that kind of gets a little bit confusing is I had a couple pair of socks that were really hurting my shin where it meets the ankle, and for today was my 50th consecutive day of walking for at least 10 to 20 minutes, and so. Like, I identified the problem. It was this one specific kind of socks. And so I went through my sock drawer and I pulled all those socks out. Okay. And then the other day I'm walking and I'm like, man, that same spot on my leg is hurting. I'm like, I thought I got rid of all these socks. But when I got home from my walk, what I realized is I had like 3 ant bites right along the same spot. My point is that like you might think it's the same resentment. You might think it's the same shit, but it's not. It just hurts in the same way. Okay? And you've got to sometimes do a further investigation, rework the steps, to go find out what is it that's causing the pain this time. Because it might not be the same thing. And so the other thing that I see so much in when people get trapped in an inventory cycle, okay, is they want to write inventory forever, okay? The slightest bother comes over them and they want to write inventory on it. And that's good. It's good to investigate and find out what, if something's really eating you up, it's good to investigate and write a piece of inventory on it. But I'll tell you where I see it show up the most is like a guy will come to me and he'll want to rework the steps. And when I take a guy back through the steps, we start back at one. We understand powerlessness in your current capacity. We don't start at four. We start at one. We go all the way back to the beginning. And we see the pattern. We see how you're powerless and how you're insane around this and how you need God's help. And then we write the inventory. And then we take that all the way through 6, 7, 8, 9. But what I see is there will be people that will be writing inventory like motherfuckers. And they never make amends. And they're writing a piece of inventory on Susie and Jimmy every 6 months. Susie, Jimmy. And then I ask them, do you want to mend to either one of them? And they go, well, no, because they did more to me than I did to them. I'm like, well, that's not what the book says. Do you owe them an amend? And then, guys, it's kind of like magic, right? They go and they make an amend to Susie and Jimmy, and you know what happens? They don't have to write any more inventory on them. Because their perspective changed. They start to see how, oh, I'm not really pissed at them. What I have is I have a separation from them because I've not cleaned up the fact that, you know, maybe you stole $10,000 from Jimmy, and every time you encounter Jimmy, you feel fear, right? You know what Jimmy wants? Wants his fucking money. When you pay him his money back, guess what? Jimmy becomes a pretty okay guy. But we're going to write inventory on Jimmy's an asshole because... Make the amend. It breaks the cycle. Okay? So then we get these pathetic list of like the ways that the world's not treating me right, self-defeating principles or my defects in this sixth step that we look at, right? And this is where when a guy's got a list, like, because when I'm listening to a piece of inventory, I'm keeping a list of self-defeating principles and ways that he shows up in relationships, and then I'm also keeping a list over here on the right hand side of potential amends, right? And then when we finish five, I review the list with him. I say, this is what I see. Does any of this ring a bell? And the guy's like, yeah, that's all me. Or sometimes there's maybe one or two where they want to negotiate. Well, I'm not sure it's that way. And then I ask them a couple questions and they're like, oh, yeah, that's me. And then I like to give it to them and say, now, I want you to do this exercise of returning home. And then I want you to really review this list. And you tell me if you want to keep being that way. You want to see God show up in a hurry? There was a guy, we finished his fifth step at a church, and we had about 2 hours before the meeting, and so I gave him the instructions of returning home, and I said, I want you to sit with this, I want you to just keep reading this list, and I want you to tell me when I come back in 2 hours if you want to keep being that way. So I went, walked around the church, did some meditation, did some other stuff, came back 2 hours later. What happened was there was a new guy sitting in that chair. He looked the same, but it was somebody completely new. And when I walked back in, he's like, I don't want to be this way anymore. He's like, this doesn't work for me. He's like, I'm tired of hurting people. I'm tired of being a victim to everything that ever happens to me.
I want to change. And, you know, on page 76, it's got this question that has one question mark and two questions in it. It says, are we now ready to let God remove from us all these things which we have admitted are objectionable? Well, the second part first is the way that you've been objectionable to you? Because I'm happy and sad to report that if it's not objectionable, you're not going to change. You're going to keep doing it. If it is objectionable, though, then there's the other question, which is, can God now remove this from you? Now, will God remove it? That's a completely different discussion. But are you willing to let God remove it? And I'm happy to report that most of the defects that I had are still here. One of the defects that I have is that I like to be the center of attention. I also like to think I know some stuff. Like to feel important. You think God's using that today? Because if some of that's not still here, I'm not sitting up here for you guys. So what happens over time is they soften. And God starts to use them in different ways. Okay? You start to change as a result of this process. Now, I wish I could tell you that the change is just magical and it happens like that. But you know what it sounds like as defects are going away? I've harmed you. And I would like the opportunity to make things right with you. The defects start to remove as I make amends. As I make amends routinely to people for being an asshole, you know what I start to realize? I might actually be an asshole. And it softens. And I get to sit across from people and see how my actions affect them. And I get to see them as people. And I get to see them, some of them, as people that were simply dealing with an insane person that would walk home, walk in the door after work every day and poke them in the eye, right? And then we get this wonderful seven-step prayer, which kind of, like I said, if the third step is the start of the prayer, then the seventh step is the close of the prayer. And it sounds a little like the third step prayer, but it's got a little bit different to it. It says, my creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, right? Because now I see it, right? I've gone through the inventory process. I have a competent sponsor that has taken me through my powerlessness over over all these things. I see how I'm maybe insane and have a lack of proportion and ability to think straight around whatever these things are. I've taken them to God in the third step. I've written this inventory where I start to see how my mistakes have caused my failure. And I've got this list that I've shared, or I've got this inventory that I've shared with somebody, and they've given me some perspective shift in the fifth step to where now I'm willing. I don't want to be that way anymore. That you should have all of me, good and bad. That's all I got. Hopefully next year you got a better version of Brandon, but this is the only Brandon that there is right now. We can work on it. I pray now that you remove from me every single defect of character which stands in my way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Which again says that if a defect is useful, God's going to continue to use it. I've got a pretty long fuse, but when it goes, it's big. And sometimes God uses that. Sometimes somebody will piss me off just right. Well, I'll say just the wrong thing and really insult them in a really, really bad way. Now, I still have to go back and clean it up. But it's been my experience that sometimes God wants me to do that. Now, doesn't give me carte blanche to go do it whenever, right? Well, God just wants me to be angry with everybody. No. That's not how it works. But sometimes I forget to pause when agitated and I let somebody know what I think about them. Sometimes in a very loud way that maybe hurts feelings and makes people cry. Sometimes it's the woman that I love and I really don't want to do that. And I have to clean that up. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. Right? God is asking, or I'm asking God to be an agent, right? We talked about that. You got to be an agent. If I do this process correctly, I get to be an agent for God. No badge, but, you know. I feel like you had some more.
Good.
Okay.
Yeah, it's 2:13. Let's come back at 2:35.